Welcome to Authors of the Pacific Northwest, where we connect Pacific Northwest authors with new listeners and provide advice for aspiring authors on the business of writing. I'm your host, Vicki J. Carter. So hi there, podcast listeners. Thank you for coming back to the Authors of the Pacific Northwest podcast. This week, I have Adam Copeland from the Pacific Northwest. So Adam, say hi to everybody.
Hello there.
Hi. So let's get into some introductions. So Adam, first, tell our listeners what state you live in, and if you have a day job besides being an author, what is that by chance?
I live in Washington State. I'm in Vancouver, Washington, and I do have a day job. I work for a company called ICD, High Performance Coatings, in Ridgeville, just north of Vancouver, and we make a very, very special, expensive paint that's mostly used in architecture, and we have a very secret customer we have a non-disclosure agreement with, and I'd love to tell you who they are because they are quite big and famous, but yeah. We do have that agreement, and I can't tell you who they are, but it's really exciting.
We won't make you do that, but that's pretty awesome. So cool. So you're right down in my neck of the woods. I'm in Southwest Washington too. But I won't make you reveal that information. So, tell us what you have published and what the genre is that you're publishing in.
I published, I guess there's three books out there now, and they are historical fantasy. That is, they're stories that take place in medieval times, and they involve real-world places, real-world people from history, but the fantastical paranormal events make it fantasy, kind of like the King Arthur stories or Robin Hood stories. They're real scenes, real locations, but you got dragons, fairies, elves, angels, whatnot. It makes it more extraordinary in the historical fiction, per se. My first book I published was called Echoes of Avalon. And the follow-up to that is Ripples in the Chalice. And I have a novelette out there called The Tower, which is essentially a standalone story. That's also a chapter within Echoes of Avalon. That's the backstory for the main antagonist, the villain.
So I ask all my authors this because I'm an aspiring author working on the journey of becoming published. And that's how this podcast kind of got developed, was I started to ask a lot of questions. And then I'm like, ooh, this could be a podcast. So Adam, are you self-published? Are you with an independent publishing company? Or are you traditionally published?
I am self-published, or as we like to call it, indie published.
Yeah. Good. Okay. And so what helped you come to the decision to be self-published? That's kind of where I'm leaning towards. And so I like to hear how authors made the decision to do that particular part of publishing, because it's changed a lot since I looked at it last.
Well, when I finished my first book and I started pitching it, sending out query letters to publishers and agents, and about after 100 rejections, some very polite, some very nice, many said, this is a great story, you're a good writer, but it's just not what we're looking for right now. And I kept hearing that over and over, right now. And I'm thinking, well, I'm ready now, and I got friends and family who want to read this and hold it in their hand as a book. And that was 2009, and POD, Publish on Demand, as a technology was really, really a viable thing, really possible. And the stigma associated with what they used to call vanity publishing or vanity press was kind of gone. So I figured, you know, life is short and I want to do this. And so I'm going to do this. And I really haven't regretted it since.
Awesome. So are you still doing print on demand, or are you going through another platform? I know a lot of self-publishers are using Amazon and another one I can't remember off the top of my head. So are you staying in that area, or have you moved forward to something different?
I'm still in that arena. And my last book that I wrote, I did pitch it at Willamette Writers Conference to different agents, and I still have it out there sent out to agents, and I'm not really hopeful that I'm going to hear back from them by this summer, and that's kind of my personal deadline to move forward and self-publish that one as well.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. Well, we'll talk a little bit about agents too, because it's something that comes up a lot with authors that I'm interviewing, and we'll get back to that discussion in a minute. So let's talk a little bit about, as a self-publisher, creating a cover and all the design that goes elements into it. Did you have some help? Were you using a friend or a graphic designer, or did you just do it all yourself?
Yes, my first cover, I had this really, of course, it was my first one. I was all excited. I had this elaborate idea of how it should look, you know, like a big fancy movie poster. Mm-hmm. And I contacted an artist on deviantart.com after scrolling through the many, many folders and files and artists. And I found a guy who did something a lot like what I was looking for. So I contacted him. Uh-huh. And he was a video game graphic designer is what he was, his day job. And the art he had posted in DeviantArt was his personal fun stuff, but it was what I was looking for. And I asked him, said, would you consider doing cover art for a book? He goes, well, nobody's ever paid me for that, but yeah, I'd be excited to. And back and forth with him on what my idea was, and he told me that would be a lot of time, a lot of work, and way outside my budget at the time.
Yeah.
And so we came down to a different idea, scaled down model, and I think that actually turned out much better because it's a kind of an iconic, very simple image that says a lot. Like if you look at the Star Wars posters, you got the emblem for the rebellion or the emblem for the empire, and people recognize that and they know right away what it means. And that's kind of what I came up with my first cover. And so I paid him money and he was really happy to be paid for a project. It looked good on his resume and I got a great image out of it.
It was a great idea. I haven't even thought about going to DeviantArt to solicit an artist for a cover design. So perfect. Thanks for the tip.
yeah, there you go. Now my second book, and before I finish my second book, I have a friend here in town through mutual friends who knew a guy that he was a great, great artist, but he, you know, he never done anything professionally. Everything he did was for fun. And I contacted him about making a movie trailer video for my first book as a promotional item. And I told him what I had in mind. And we came up with 7 images that he made. And I paid him a bit of money for each image. And we cobbled them together as a video, which you can find on Goodreads and Amazon on my profiles.
Oh, cool.
And on YouTube. And then when it came time for my second book, I went back to him because I was so happy with his work, told him what I had in mind, and right there in Starbucks, we're discussing it. He's doodling on his pad, and he holds it up to me, just a hand doodle and pencil right there on the spot. He goes, you mean like this? I said, yeah, that's it. And then he made a better image of it, and then he computer... I forget the word for it, but it's his handwritten image, but he manipulates it with the computer and puts different layers on it and gloss and whatnot. It looks incredible. I'm very, very happy with it. And that's for Ripples in the Chalice. And if anybody ever gets a chance to look at that after listening to this, I think they'll really get what I'm saying by that, that he's a great artist, great guy.
That's super great. So let me backtrack a little bit. So for promoing your second book, you put together a little movie trailer of his artwork. Is that correct?
It was for the first book that led to the relationship that went to the second book cover.
You have quite a few creative ideas. I might have to steal that one from you. That's really good.
So. Well, if you do a video, let me say it right now up front before I forget. Make it no more than 30 to 90 seconds because if it's much longer than that, you're going to lose the attention of people. Mine was like 3 minutes and that's just way too long. So that was a lesson learned on my part.
Well, thank you for sharing that information with me personally and any other aspiring authors out there. That it's, you know, the marketing, we can talk a little bit here about the marketing, because I have another question before that. The marketing is, you have to be pretty creative to get attention. It's pretty competitive out there. So I love your creativity. It's fantastic. So let's go wrap around a little bit. And I ask all my authors that I'm interviewing about this, about soliciting an agent, because it's kind of in the forefront of my mind. I, of course, am not ready to solicit because I haven't published yet, but kind of talk me through what you were using. Did you have a platform you were using? Were you writing agents? How did you find agents to contact as far as trying to find one? You said something about Willamette. You went to a Willamette weekly workshop. Is that where it was at?
Willamette Writers Conference.
Okay.
This is an annual thing. And they're one resource out there, and they're huge. They're nationally famous, and they're local here.
Mm-hmm.
And they put on a conference every year, and they've got all kinds of workshops. They've got a huge, huge resource to go to, but you got to pay for it. It's the membership is $50-some a month, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm not a current member. I joined just long enough to do the conference last summer because that was a big deal. And it's kind of like, if you're a local writer, you've got to go to a Willamette Writers Conference at least once. It's like a pilgrimage type thing. And so last summer was the time I did it.
Mm-hmm.
And aside from groups like that, especially locally, there's Meetup, you look on Meetup under writing or publishing or whatever, you're going to find a tremendous amount of resources. We live in the golden age of information and the internet, and there's more information out there, and you know what to do with that will help you with this sort of thing as well.
Yeah, that's true. So when you were pitching were you pitching at the Willamette Writers Workshop? Is that where you pitched for an agent? Did you go in and select agents and sit down and talk with them? Is that how the pitch goes?
Yeah, the summer conference, that's what it's famous for, is that the conference invites agents from all over the world, really, mostly the States, but a lot of Canadian ones and some from outside the country. And you can register for a 10-minute sit-down with them. It's like, it's a fundraiser. It makes money for the conference and for the agents, I'm sure, that you pay like $25 for a 10-minute sit-down face-to-face with an agent. You can work on your pitching. So your pitching in itself is a skill and an art and something you got to craft.
Yeah.
And I spent a lot of time working on mine, and it was my first time really pitching face-to-face like that, and I think I flubbed it. Now, some say I did okay, and others really didn't say anything, or actually they gave me feedback. One of them did, and was pretty harsh.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's how it goes.
Journey, right? And if you're not out there putting yourself out and trying those skills, then you may never know. And I think the feedback is probably, even if it is harsh, sometimes it's hard to take harsh feedback. I know that. but it was probably useful, I think, hopefully in the future, because it's definitely a skill. I think most of us authors prefer to sit back and write and not have to put ourselves out necessarily, but we have to.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Yeah. So it kind of wraps back to, and we can wrap back to the marketing ideas that you've done. I have found, as I've been doing some research myself and talking to a lot of authors, that we as authors, especially, I mean, it doesn't really matter if you're self-published or you're working traditionally, you have to be comfortable with marketing yourself on social media and getting out there and really putting yourself out. So I love the trailer idea that you suggested. That's really cool. What are some other ideas and techniques that you've used for marketing?
Well, even in this day and age, or even more so nowadays, publishers, if you're traditionally published, you are required to go out and promote yourself. You have to be very active. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I got done reading For Whom the Bell Tolls by Hemingway, and I read his little bio in the back. And it just sounded like all he did was write and everything else took care of itself. And that even if that was true for him way back when, it's certainly not the case today. And yeah, you have to do a lot. You have to online presence, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, you know, whatever your thing is that you're really good at, that should be where you should be online, a blog. The more successful writers that I know, they absolutely swear up and down you have to have a mailing list and a newsletter. And I hate that. I hate that so much. I cannot get into the newsletter. I don't want to do it. I don't. That's probably holding me back.
Yeah.
But I don't want to do that.
Maybe you can collab.
And blogging. Yeah.
Yeah.
When I had an active website that wasn't full of malware, I did have a blog, and I had some good material out on my blog. It became a repository for my good ideas, and I do Toastmasters to help me with my public speaking and being able to stand in front of people and give pitches and whatnot. And my Toastmasters group was for writers. It was called Thrill the Quill. And so some of the speeches I gave were on writing topics, and I turned those into blogs, put them on my blog. But I found that blogging really isn't my forte, because they say to be a really successful blogger or to get anything out of it, you have to be posting at least 3 times a week.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of work, and I couldn't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you. And I'm looking at all of it. You know, the one that you mentioned that I think is really important is the Toastmasters. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because I do public speaking often and do large group settings and trainings in my day job. And so I'm pretty darn comfortable in front of people for most cases. But I have found that when it comes to reading my own work, my own written work, that's where I get nervous about things. And so I think that a Toastmaster is a fantastic idea also to get that skill, that practice for getting in front of people. And even like an interview like this, you know, you and I having interviews on podcasts, that can make people nervous too. So I think Toastmasters are absolutely great. And I'm glad you mentioned that one. What other support groups and associations do you are you a part of? I know one in particular, because that's how I found you. But so tell the listeners and other authors what support groups that you are involved with.
I belong to, and I'm a co-founder of, a group called Northwest Independent Writers Association, which is NIWA, N-I-W-A. And that was something a buddy and I came up with at a science fiction convention that we were doing in Portland, because his book is a horror, or it's kind of horror. It's I characterize it as a 80s hair band who fights vampires.
Oh my gosh. I love it.
It's a rock and roll horror adventure. And I didn't know him prior to the convention, and I had got a table there to promote my book and to sell it at the in the dealer's room. And I got contacted by the dealer, say, hey, there's this other guy who's selling his books as well, but he missed the deadline to get a table. Would you mind sharing a table with him and share the cost? I said, yeah, sure, why not? And we hit it off, and we had a great time. And he came up with the idea that, you know, there's a lot of people here like us selling books. You know, we should really band together and share resources and, you know, be a support group. And I'm like, that sounds like a lot of work. Next thing I know, I'm putting together invitations and sending them out on Goodreads and Facebook and our other social networks to, you know, have an initial meeting, bringing people together to see what their thoughts were on the matter. And 5 people showed up, and the next thing I know, we're 200 people now, I guess.
He
and I have moved on. I mean, we're still involved, but we're no longer part of the quote-unquote management. We're not presidents anymore. And the fact that it's still going strong on its own 2 legs is a testament to how important it is for writers to have a community and network. And that's what NIWA has become, and I'm still part of that.
Yeah, so awesome. Well, I love the fact that you guys had brought together kind of the same idea that I'm doing as well with this podcast, is that I realized early on I needed a support group of writers. And I was pretty intimidated with asking, but I did. And you guys just jumped in and created a great association. And I feel like my podcast is kind of the similar thing. I'm creating quite a nice network of authors in the area. So it's really exciting. So, and that's how I found you. And I'm going to make sure that that website is for other authors is listed in your show notes so that people can connect to with the association. So tell me, Adam, what keeps you going? What's your inspiration?
Well, I honestly don't know what inspiration wise for continuing, because it is this lifestyle, this choice, or whatever you want to call it, kind of beats you up pretty good. It kicks you in the ego a lot. And to have rejection after rejection, and just to get bad reviews, and you know, it's you're putting your soul, your heart out there exposed, and it gets kicked around pretty good. And you get some great, wonderful moments, great relationships, good feedback. For every one star review I get, I'll get five star reviews with nice things to say. So there's a give and take. And what keeps me going is I don't know what that something is, because people who tend to be writers who've at least published once, they've got that commitment, that follow through, that something in their heart that makes them want to write, to keep on writing. Same thing with artists or musicians, I imagine. That something just burns inside you and keeps you going. Like, even if I was told that I'll be never published again, I'll still be writing stories, if only for my own, to get it out of me and to share with immediate friends and family. Mm-hmm. So it's just, I don't know what that something is.
Yeah. And that's something that I hear over and over again with authors. It's we can't stop. I mean, if we stop, we kind of would go crazy, because these stories are in our minds. And if they don't come out, we feel a little bit schizophrenic sometimes. So we have to keep writing. So awesome. So for our final thoughts, before we start working, have you read your part that you were going to read for us, I have one other question, and then we'll set the stage for your reading. So what information would you like your new readers that are listening to this for the first time, what information would you like them to know about your future work that you might be working on?
My very next book that I plan on putting out there in the world is different than what I've done in the past. My past books have been historical fantasy. That is, it's got the medieval sword and sorcery vibe to it. My very next one is also going to be historical fiction. Mm. It's not going to be the fantasy. It's going to be a horror adventure set in World War I with vampires and zombies. Okay. And that's my next project coming out.
Awesome. Vampires and zombies are a hot market. And it seems like the Pacific Northwest, we have a lot of great vampire and zombie and paranormal writers. And I always wonder if it's because we do get a little darkness most of the year around here.
Could be.
Okay, so Adam, let's set the stage for your reading. So before you start your reading, share with the listeners a bit about the setting or the characters or whatever background we need for us to really fall into the reading where you're at. And then I will take us out after your reading.
Okay. I'm going to be reading from the prologue to my second book, Ripples in the Chalice. And I had kind of started with the idea that this second book could be a standalone story on its own, that you didn't have to read the first book, but it sure helps if you did, because you'll recognize the names, the places, and the scenarios in this prologue. And if so, what's happening here, if you read the first book, you'll be freaking out. You're like, oh my God, how did this come to be? How did this happen? And you should be drawn right in and excited. But if you haven't read the first book, you still should be drawn in and interested, because it's intriguing and what's going on. They say when you're dying, your life passes before your eyes. They're right. What they don't tell you is that life mocks and lectures you the entire time it's happening. Sir Patrick Gawain did not need that. Not now. Not when a sword was about to strike him at eye level. He noted its wide swinging arc. The blade seemed to slow down the closer it came to his head. Indeed, everything began to slow down, taking on a dreamlike, or rather, nightmarish quality, as if the world had plunged into a sea of despair where grief hindered all movement. To his left, green springs burned. The central keep tower guttered like a giant candle whose flame licked at low-hanging dark clouds, giving them a brimstone glow. To his right, flanks of a group of enemy horsemen disappeared into the forest beyond green springs. In a dream motion, the earth the horses kicked up hung in the air, gently rolling in suspension. The horsemen pursued Amy, who held the object of all their troubles and their salvation. They followed much closer than Patrick wanted. He had hoped to give her a much greater head start, but even that had not gone according to plan. The enemy would catch her soon, and her only protection would be her one-time rapist with whom she rode. Around him, the battle raged. The combatants danced the deadly dance, 1,000 rising arms and falling bodies in tune to the music of clashing steel. Men's cries of pain and anger formed the song. Reuben may have been dreamlike, but it only gave him more time to see his friends and comrades dying. Nearby, Sir Corbin spun with a long sword in each hand, surrounded by opponents. Sir Peridor struggled to get free as an attacker palmed his face into the water of a deep puddle. Sir Waylon and Sir Brian fought back to back, running out of precious space to maneuver. 4 enemies forced another avant-gardesman, his identity obscured by the press of attackers, to his knees. They held his arms out to the sides while a 5th pulled his head back to expose his throat and run a sword blade across it. A mob of attackers pulled down the last of the mounted avant-guardsmen, horse and all. Even before the knight hit the ground, his attackers struck with sword, axe, halberd, and maul like farmers threshing wheat. Patrick realized it had been raining for some time now. The odd slowing of time enabled him to see the drops of rain, blood, and flying sweat as they hung trembling in the air. His heartbeat drummed louder. How did things go so terribly wrong? How did it come to this? Were not the righteous supposed to prevail? He'd caused all this. Things could have been so different if he had only made different choices. One in particular, so long ago, and none of this would have happened. The consequences of his action lay all around him in the mud, the blood, and the fire. Now the grand experiment known as Green Springs on the island of Avalon collapsed into a bloody ruin. And once they captured Amy with her precious charge, the world would never be the same either. Patrick would not witness any of this because death had arrived, brought to him by the hands of his own brother. Patrick's sword arm dipped. His brother's blade came within inches of his face now, moving so slowly it may as well have stopped, but did not, for he could see its sharpened edge pass through a fat raindrop, slowly parting it like a quivering bead of quicksilver. As he watched the drop separate on the blade, Patrick noticed a reflection in the metal. In the reflection, he could see a figure at his back walking towards him, another attacker coming from behind. This figure moved at a normal pace, not in slow motion. Once right behind him, Patrick recognized the face. The sword truly did stop moving now, the parted raindrop froze in place. "Rise, Patrick," the voice said. Patrick came to a standing position from his knees and turned to face the newcomer. "You," he said. Before him stood a mirror image of himself. Though rain and sweat did not plaster his other self's dark shoulder-length hair against his scalp, nor did he wear Patrick's torn and bloody black avant-garde surcoat with a white swan emblem on his chest. He did not have red armor with loose chainmail links spilling from threads. The other's face, with its high cheekbones and light complexion, was clear of cuts, blood, bruises, and mud. His own hazel green eyes, with a hint of gold circling the pupils, peered at him intensely. Once, Patrick referred to him as the apparition, because when he came during his silent, unsettling visitations, wore a deeply cowled robe. Nowadays, he came wearing a sort of simple cassock of a forgettable color and made no attempt to obscure his face. The visitor still preferred to wear gloves, though, which Patrick noticed when the other hooked his thumbs in his belt. Also, the other no longer remained silent, though Patrick often wished that he did. "Have you come to save me at the last moment again?" Patrick asked. "No," the other responded, gesturing with a nod towards where Patrick had sat on his knees moments before. Patrick frowned and looked in the direction. To his surprise, he saw he still knelt there, the sword dangerously close to his head, all frozen in time. Patrick staggered back and looked down at his hands. He still wore his bloodied and muddy gauntlet, but he held no sword. He gasped and patted himself down, confirming the solidness of his body. "Well, this is a new one," he said. "What does it mean? Am I dead then?" The other shook his head. "You will be, though, unless you do something quick." Patrick shrugged. "So do something. Step in as you did when I fought Loki and he had the upper hand." A sneer, ever so faint, curled on the other's lip. "I'm here to help you help yourself this time," he responded. "Just moments ago, you lowered your sword arm. You weren't even trying." Patrick sagged and ran a hand through his hair, leaving a streak of grime. "Why? Why do you care? Who are you? What are you? Why won't you tell me?" The other approached the frozen, still kneeling Patrick and bent over to scrutinize his face as if fascinated by an insect. "Much rides on your success here," he said at last. "You must hold on as long as possible." Patrick chuckled without mirth. "Define success. Look around. It's over. I held on as long as possible, and they're still dying." The other broke his gaze away from the kneeling Patrick. "It is not over. You must continue the fight." Patrick staggered a few steps in the direction of the keep and looked at a particular spot of ground before the gate. His jaw muscle moved as he ground his teeth. "I'm so sorry," he shouted at the spot. His eyes glistened with tears, though none fell to his cheeks. He pulled his gauntlets off and stared at his hands, turning to the other. "So much blood," he spoke softly, rubbing his fingers along a scar that ran the length of his right palm. "It flows from the people who trusted me, believed in me." He wrung his hands in an attempt to make them clean. "I can't get it off. I can't get it off." "Get a hold of yourself," the other shouted, displaying for the first time something resembling emotion. "You must be strong. You must follow through. You have come so far and taken such great steps. Don't stop." "Why?" Patrick asked, meaning more than just the immediate inquiry. "These people followed you onto the battlefield because they believed in you," the other replied. "If there's any chance of their surviving and changing the course of history, you must believe in yourself as well. You must fight until the end." "Even if it looks hopeless," Patrick whispered. "Especially when it looks hopeless," the other whispered back. Then gestured to the still frozen Patrick. "And now it is time to return and raise your sword." "What? That's it?" Patrick glowered at the interloper. "That is your sole purpose for being here. That is all the aid you have to offer?" Patrick waved his hands at the spectacle around them, scowling. "Just to say, you must hold on? How does that help?" "What more do you want from me?" the other asked, glowering back. "I want to know where I went wrong. I want to go back and change things. Surely, if you can stop time, you can reverse it." The other shook his head gravely. "I did not stop time, merely took you out of it for a moment." "Then what good are you?" Patrick kicked at a dirt clod. The other stepped closer, almost nose to nose. "Would it motivate you to raise your sword arm one last time if I showed you that you did nothing wrong, that your guilt is an illusion?" "Yes," Patrick said without hesitation. The other reached up and touched Patrick's face, the glove rasping against the skin of his temple. "Then see," he said. Patrick's vision suddenly narrowed to a dark tunnel. He gasped and almost lost his balance. "What do you see?" the other asked. I'm high above, in the dark, looking down on a boat on a river, lit by lanterns," Patrick responded. "I don't remember this. What am I looking at?" "You are looking at the whole story, all the choices leading to today. Did you really think this was all your doing? Everyone has to take a share of responsibility. Now, watch."
Bravo, Adam. I'm hooked. I kind of wanted you to keep going, but we won't. We'll let listeners find your books and finish the story, and I'll probably be one of them as well. So wonderful, wonderful. Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate you being on the podcast. And listeners, if you love what you heard from Adam, make sure you find him and get his book. Thank you for listening to the podcast. We hoped you loved hearing from the author as much as we did. If you did enjoy the author, make sure you find them on social media. Buy their book and write a review. Are you a published author and would like to be featured on the podcast? Visit us at our website to learn more. You can help support the production of this podcast by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Share the podcast with your friends. And most importantly, become a supporter. Supporters receive monthly bonus podcasts and a newsletter filled with tips from our authors. To find out more how to become a supporter, visit our website. And finally, I hope you always remember to enjoy the journey. Until next week, this is Vicki J. Carter saying goodbye.